Justin Dillon was a musician. 10 years ago, he read an article in the New York Times that was written by Nicholas Kristof entitled Girls for Sale. It was about young Cambodian girls sold into slavery. Labor brokers would come into these poor villages and hamlets and offer young girls jobs in the big city. And they and their parents were promised that the girls would work in noodle shops or in hair salons and make enough money to send back to their families. And so the parents let them go. And what would happen is that the young girls would instead be thrown into brothels and forced into sex slavery. The brothel owners would get them addicted to drugs so they would be easier to control. And when Justin heard this, he was incredibly troubled about this, but he felt powerless. What could he do about it? So at the time he read this article, he was doing a series of concerts in Eastern Europe. And he was confronted by the reality of that New York Times article with the people he was meeting. He discovered young women who told him these horrible stories of labor brokers coming through their villages and hamlets and offering them these fake jobs. And he said he didn't know what to do, but he needed to do something. So he took a first step. And since he was a musician, he thought he could gather together some of his musician friends and make some videos. Well, as it turned out, they ended up making a full-length film. The film was released in 2008 called Call and Response. And this is according to the Wikipedia page about this film. The film was Justin Dillon's directorial debut and has received worldwide recognition, becoming one of the most important devices in spurring the modern-day abolitionist movement, and was one of the year's top documentaries. There are 27 million slaves in the world today, more than any other time in history. Slaves exploited for sex, slaves exploited for work in mining the raw materials that go into our cell phones, slaves producing the palm oil that goes into nearly all the products we use, like toothpaste. So Justin developed a website, Slavery Footprint, and he discovered that modern-day slavery is not only in sweatshops that we often hear about or making tennis shoes or whatever, but hidden all along supply chains of virtually everything that we consume. And you can go online to the website Slavery Footprint and take a survey and discover, as he put it, how big your slavery plantation is. So I went on the other day and I discovered I have 41 slaves working for me. Based on where I live, what I do, the products I generally consume. Justin Dillon eventually founded an organization called Made in the Free World. The site provides information for corporations about all of these supply chains. And so they know not to purchase products from suppliers who use forced labor. So Justin uses the power of the marketplace for both corporations and consumers regarding their purchases. He had no idea when he was a musician 10 years ago that he would be doing something like this. He had no training for it. He was a musician. And he tells this story in a book that has just been published this week called A Selfish Plan to Change the World, Finding Big Purpose in Big Problems. I just produced an interview with him, and the show is going to be on podcast on Friday. He tells stories of people who, when faced with something that troubled them, and they didn't know what to do about it, or they didn't know if it was up to them to do something about it, somebody should do something about it, didn't know if they were in a position themselves to do something, but they did something anyway. They took a first step. And his point is this. The meaning we want for our lives, our purpose, is connected intimately with the problems of the world. And this is what he means by being selfish. It's not the point to be martyrs or to pretend that we're altruistic or that we're good or self-sacrificing, because generally we aren't. We do a good thing because it helps us. It gives us purpose. So don't deny it. Go with it. Frederick Buechner, in his book, Wishful Thinking, wrote about vocation and purpose. He said something similar. The place God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. And according to Justin Dillon, there is no one to tell us what to do. There's no one to tell us how to do it. No one is there to give us permission. He said, no one who ever changed the world set out to change the world. They just took a first step. He said something else. He said, I truly believe that 100 years from now, people will look back on this generation and say, you had it all. You knew it all. You were given so much connectivity. Did you do something with it? Did you use that connectivity to help others and pull people out of slavery? I truly believe that's before us, but it's not going to happen if we just want it to happen overnight. I've often thought the same thing. This is an incredible time to be alive when so much is at our fingertips, especially those of us born into privilege in some form or another. We have no idea what freedoms and what choices we take for granted. The incredible information that's available to us instantly on the internet. And the truth is, it won't last forever. It may last longer than each of us, or it may not, but either way, we won't last forever. But here we are now, with so much at our disposal. What will we do with it? What will be our legacy? The book of Deuteronomy is a series of sermons by Moses as he is just about ready to die. But he's still in good shape at 120. But Moses is telling the Israelites his legacy. He tells them where they have been, who they are, and where they are going. Biblical critics have demonstrated that the book of Deuteronomy was put together much later than Moses' time in the 7th century B.C., before the priestly account that makes up most of the book of Leviticus, as well as the first creation story. So these sermons in Deuteronomy were really put on the lips of Moses, but they were likely written centuries after Moses lived. The creators of Deuteronomy were also the creators of Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings, which is often called the Deuteronomic history. And there's a lot I could say about all of that, and I will come back to it in later sermons. But for today, I want to reflect on Moses and his legacy within the story itself. So he visits the mountaintop, and he sees the promised land. And he isn't going to get there, but he sees a promise, and that's all he gets. In one sense, it isn't enough. We want to see what will become of the fruits of our labor. We want to see what will become of our children or our grandchildren or our great-grandchildren. But life doesn't work like that. We get a glimpse of a promise. 20th century theologian Reinhold Niebuhr put it clearly, "Nothing that is worth doing can be achieved in our lifetime. Therefore, we must be saved by hope. Nothing which is true or beautiful or good makes complete sense in any immediate context of history. Therefore, we must be saved by faith. And nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. Therefore, we must be saved by love." The point I want to make about Deuteronomy on this Memorial Day weekend, when we are thinking about things like sacrifice and ideals and legacy and mortality and memory, is that Deuteronomy reminds us that life has an end point and we can choose what we will do with it. And Moses said to the people, choose life. The choice we make will be the legacy we leave. And that legacy will influence the lives of future generations, even as we, like Moses, will never enter that promised land and see it. People who have done amazing things and given the world marvelous gifts do not know what they did because their lives ended before they saw the fruit of their own labors. They did what they did because they saw a need and they took a first step. We remember them. We know what they did, and we enjoy that fruit. Now it's our turn. Those who dreamed about establishing a congregation in the countryside of Beaverton had no idea what it would be in 2017. The ones who made the plans, who gave their money, who purchased the land, who broke the ground, who built the facility, did not know what it would become. And while some are still around to see what Southminster has become, most have passed on, but they left a legacy. How many lives have been touched by the shared life at Southminster? How do you calculate that? How do you measure the impact of friendships? How do you measure the impact of worship experiences, music, sermons, mission projects? We are enjoying the fruits of trees planted 60 years ago, and we cannot pay it back. We can only, as they say, pay it forward. That's what life is. George Davis was our town historian in the first church I served in Lowville, New York. It's way upstate near the Canadian border. And Judge Davis was a lawyer and a judge and a longtime Presbyterian. And I always enjoyed my conversations with Judge Davis. He was always excited to tell me about the history of Lowville and the Presbyterian church that dated back to the 1820s. And one day he came up to me and he told me that in addition to his yearly pledge, he was going to make a contribution to the permanent fund of the Presbyterian Foundation. And after he died, that fund would have enough in it within the interest to provide a substantial yearly gift to the church. He could continue to make a pledge to the church after he died, he thought. And he did it. He took the first step. And as I shared his story with his permission, others did a similar thing. That little congregation benefits still from Judge Davis and his foresight. And doing this made George happy. And he actually was a pretty happy guy. In fact, his happiest day, as I recall, was when he met Hillary Clinton. She came to Lowville when she was running for Senate in New York, and he was grinning like a little kid when he got his picture taken next to her. He liked Hillary because he believed in her quest for access to affordable health care for everyone, a quest that remains for us. We pay it forward by taking that first step toward the world's need. We take it because it gives us joy to participate in something that's worthwhile. And there's nothing wrong with joy. It's only because of joy that we have the energy to be able to do whatever good thing is before us. It takes joy to leave a legacy. In the words of Emma Goldman, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution."
Join us now, the meadow is green and the water's blue.